From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, inviting you to meet our guests and be part of the discussion. Today we're asking, what are the stories you can't stop talking about? On today's Coastline, Kevin Maurer joins us in the studio. Kevin has been reporting for the Star News since 2011. He's recently spent time in Raleigh covering the state legislature. He's also the best-selling co-author of No Easy Day, the first-hand account of the mission that killed Osama bin Laden. The book is still maintaining its spot on the New York Times bestseller list. And before joining the Star News in 2011, Kevin spent 2 years at the paper as the Associated Press correspondent based in Wilmington. Kevin, welcome to Coastline.
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Also with us today is Scott Pickey, news director of WWAY-TV. He started at the station in 2010. Scott was also news director at WECT-TV for 3 years, and he's worked as a newsroom manager in Raleigh, Syracuse, Huntsville, Alabama, Fayetteville, Arkansas, El Paso, and Richmond. Scott's originally from Memphis, where he graduated from Christian Brothers University. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you.
Great to have both of you here. During the next hour, we invite you to join the discussion with your questions and comments about the stories we cover and the issues that are on your mind. Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to talk@whqr.org. You can also tweet us at #HQRTalk. We have a lot to cover today, but first I want to talk a little bit about how the two of you know each other and your history together. Kevin, as a New York Times bestselling author, you've appeared on WWAY's airwaves to talk about your book and some of the controversy around that book. And Scott, you and your journalistic style were the subject of a profile written by Kevin for the Star News. What was that, about a year,
two and a half Novembers ago? Yeah.
Okay. Since that time, Scott, has anything changed in terms of your approach? Because I think in his piece, Kevin, you had a great line. You wrote, "Even Mother Teresa would look guilty with a camera chasing her." That was so evocative. And what was that about? Is that still part of your style?
Well, ask Kevin first, because I intrigued him, I think. Kevin's a good friend of mine, and he makes me laugh, and he makes me think, but I sparked his interest in, it was his idea to write the story, not mine.
Well, I mean, it really started when I was covering the county for the Star News, and I just noticed the difference in the way that Scott and WAY went about the stories versus some of the other media outlets in the area. And having covered so many stories and sort of competing against them, they piqued my curiosity, which really is the start of most stories for me.
And a lot of people also had been talking about your style, Scott.
Sure.
Style, Scott. Yes, and which is chasing down public officials and holding them accountable. Is that still true over at WWAY?
Well, holding the powerful accountable, absolutely. I think that that's what we try to do every day, especially with a controversial discussion or a topic like baseball stadium or anything like that. We also have a fairly new partnership with the Star News, and one of the things that worried them was that style when we had our first couple of meetings, because print and broadcast people are completely different. They're wired differently. They think differently. Even though we cover the news together, you know, we're more showbiz than they are. And that's what they noticed when they came over and visited us, about the makeup and the deadlines and the lights and everything. But we reminded them that I think people get it now, that we don't have to chase them down because we're going to come, so you might as well expect it. And I think more and more people now are expecting us to be there and expecting that they will have to say something, even if it's, I can't talk right now about it.
And so you're saying you've actually managed to open up the dialogue here between media and public officials.
I think so. And, you know, like with the Wilmington Police Department investigation last week, if it's a big story like that, we send managers to help. People who have been in the market for a while and know the playmakers and know the officials and have had lunch with them or have been in their office. And I think that that helps. I think that that, you know, one of the complaints that we get is your reporters are so young and they turn over so much that they sometimes ask stupid questions or they don't know what they're doing. And on big stories like that, we want to help in the car, give the reporter context of the bigger story. They may not have been here when the first event happened. It's a big and a long series of meetings. So that's one of the things I've tried to do, is to reach out to community people, leaders in the community, and have a one-on-one relationship that they can call me or I can call them.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Reporter Roundup on Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn in the studio with Kevin Maurer from the Star News and Scott Pickey of WWAY-TV. We're taking your calls, emails, and tweets in just a little while. The number is 343-1138. You can also email us at talk@whqr.org or send us a tweet at #HQR Talk. Kevin, what are the kinds of stories, well, this is actually for both of you, but let's start with Kevin, that get the most comments and reader interest on your webpage?
Well, I mean, a crime really drives, I think, everything. I mean, I think Scott would say the same thing. Crime stories are always popular for on the paper. With our blogs, they get a lot of crime and politics and drama. I mean, drama sells. I think we have quite a bit of that lately, you know, around here. But really, it is that the crime stories do sell the paper the most.
Are there particular kinds of crime stories, or is it just the idea that it's local and it happened here and it's a scary thought? What drives that interest?
I think people just look at TV. I mean, if you just look at primetime TV, it's full of cop procedural shows. I think people like the procedurals, and I think they like any kind of crime. In particular, and I know Brian Fresco is one of our crime reporters, and Fran, our other crime reporter, they do a great job of covering it. It's really a major player on our beats and the way we think about the world. And you know, I've had the flavor of covering that pipe bomber, and that pipe bomber, it's just intriguing. I mean, even I'm intrigued by it, and so that's what sells, really.
And Scott at WWAY, you have a lot of viewer interaction on your webpage. And what are the stories that really drives that kind of interaction?
I agree with Kevin. It's crime. It's personal stories where, like there was a teacher in Pender County last year that was charged with sending inappropriate text to one of her students. And it was interesting to see the comments change, because when we first reported it, it was, she would never do anything like this, and you need to take this down, and you need to blah, blah, blah. And then the emotional people seem to come out first, and then the more level-headed people seem to come out a day later. And then once she admitted that she did it and read an apology in court, and then it's funny, some people will say, well, where are all you people that said she was innocent? Where have you gone? And I remember the managers approve all the comments on the website. It is the crime. Yesterday, we had an airman charged with dropping his dead baby in the woods in Columbus County. And when I got in this morning, we can see the hits. That had 7,000 hits overnight. So, and when people forward that story up to Goldsboro, or they forward it to their parents or whatever, you can see it pick up and just go crazy.
And what is it about that particular story that's so compelling, beyond the idea that it might have been a Google search because his last name was Pope?
Right.
And yesterday we have a new Pope.
Well, and I understand that we put the Pope story up and it doesn't get a lot of hits, right, because that's not our forte. Local news is our forte. And if you want to know more about the Pope, go to another website.
Right.
I hate to say it, but you know, people say, I want good news, I'm tired of the bad news. But I always say, that's like me asking you, do you like your mother-in-law? You're always going to say yes. And people do gravitate to crime stories. News is conflict. News, that's what news is. And we do our fair share of features, and the reporters love to cover features because they're fun. And we always get new people in that say, I want to do features, but we would put features on the website and it would only have 300 or 400 hits. And when you got a crime story that has, or if it's a CFPUA story, it's anything that hits a nerve in this town. The baseball stadium was hot, and you got a lot of people that, during the baseball debate, we'd have 3 or 4 people going back at each other.
Right.
And I've even had a commenter say, you're not approving my comments fast enough. You got to get in there, give me control, and I'll approve them. I'm like, dude, I can't do that. But
well, let's talk about the stories that we think people should be more interested in. Kevin, what are some of the issues that you think are really important that people aren't talking about, that you have to work harder to sort of engage the public on?
Well, I think the harder ones are, you know, tax reform. I think tax reform, and I know you had a forum on the station, what, last week on tax reform? I mean, you know as well as I do how difficult that is to synthesize so that people will care about it. But that is a huge issue. I know some of the stories that you know, going back to stuff I've covered on the county that I don't even like to cover that much, but they're important. The budget, the county budget can be very dry.
Yes.
But for us locally, I mean, that's where your money's going and how they're going to spend your money. So you should be engaged in that. And I won't get the engagement that you'd get for, say, you know, the stories that you get for the crime stories. I wrote a series on the immigrants. I mean, I thought that was a great story. I really enjoyed writing it. I really enjoyed reporting it. It doesn't get nearly what I would get for, say, when I did the story about Doug Bevel and the issue with the state with the dead bodies, that, you know, dead bodies are going to sell better than, you know, an inspirational story about an immigrant. So that's the reality. And I go back to what Scott said. I mean, it is the conflict. And, you know, in the budget story, you don't get the conflict. But yet you need to realize that story is important. That's what your money's doing.
But that makes a good newspaper story. We'll say that in our newsroom. Right. Let the newspaper have that.
It's true. There is a big difference there between print and broadcast and what you can do. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Reporters Roundtable here on Coastline. In just a little while, we're going to be talking about what's happening in Raleigh and some of the legislative changes going on there. But we are opening the phone lines. The number is 343-1138. You can also send us an email at talk@whqr.org or tweet us at #HQRTalk. If you'd like to ask a question about a recent state or local news story, raise a concern that you have about this area, or just weigh in on an issue, we'd like to hear from you. What are the stories that you're talking about? 343-1138. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and I'm joined in the studios today by Scott Pickey, news director at WWAY-TV, and Kevin Maurer of the Star News. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We're also now taking your phone calls. 343-1138 is the number to call, or send us an email at talk@whqr.org. This is the Reporters Roundtable here on Coastline, and we're talking about the stories that you can't stop talking about. Kevin, you've recently spent some quality time in Raleigh covering the General Assembly. Can we start with the dynamic there that you've observed with this new administration, the GOP majority? Are you seeing a dynamic with Democrats who are just sort of marginalized, frustrated observers? Is there a dialogue going on? What's it like?
Well, I mean, I think there is a dialogue. It's the Republicans' turn. And that's the sense I got in Raleigh, is that they've waited a long time to take over. They have a supermajority, and they're going to get some of the things that they've wanted to get done. It's an interesting place. Raleigh I've covered D.C. as well, and I found that I get the same feeling in D.C. that I get in Raleigh, which is sometimes Raleigh forgets there's a state attached to it. And they like to get into the political games a little bit up there. But that's just the nature of the beast, I think, when you get into covering these politics. But I only covered the Raleigh legislature long enough to learn where everything was. And we got somebody up there now. But I'm intrigued by it. I think our delegation is really interesting. We got a lot of freshmen on there, so they were learning it as well. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they come out. But you get a sense the Republicans have waited a long time to have the chance they have now.
It seems like people have been really busy. There's so much going on, and it's not superficial stuff. There's pretty profound change going on. For instance, they're looking at voter ID laws. There was a hearing yesterday in Raleigh about that. And they took some expert testimony. And I think some of the experts were saying there's no evidence, really, of voter fraud in North Carolina. On the other hand, if you pass a voter ID law, it doesn't necessarily mean that there will be voter suppression as a result of that. Have you, either of you, Scott Pickey, Kevin Maurer, heard dialogue about that?
Well, they cover Raleigh better than we do, just because they can afford to have somebody in Raleigh and we can't. And a lot of times, if you put somebody up there, you may not get a story every day. And a lot of times in the past, maybe not now, but it can be pretty boring up there. What we have tried to do is take that dynamic and boil it down to, for instance, yesterday, Senator Tom Goolsbee put the death penalty back on the table. The de facto moratorium goes away in his bill.
What does that mean, Scott? For people who haven't been following the death penalty in North Carolina, where are we with it?
As I understand it, we discussed it in our morning meeting this morning because that's a story we're going to do today. And it's interesting that Tom would do that because he's a defense attorney, a criminal defense attorney. What it means is there are 200-something people on death row, and the state has not executed anybody since 06, I believe. And it was because in many of the cases, it was an all-white jury and a black defendant. And there has been evidence of some miscarriage of justice. Some of the people, I'm not going to say how many, I don't think anybody knows. There may be one or two people on death row that shouldn't be there. And so because of all the appeals, 200-something, they just said, let's just put this on the back burner right now and take care of all these appeals. And Tom's bill would like to, let's move the process forward a little quicker. And, you know, he's one that's easily available. He sent out a news release yesterday announcing that he had put that bill into motion. He is very communicative with the media. He's very media savvy. There are some people in our delegation that aren't, that they're very difficult to reach.
You mean in the local delegation?
Correct.
Who are
Correct.
Some of the people who are harder to reach?
Bill Rabin from Brunswick County doesn't return phone calls, and we've had to repeatedly ask him to, hey, can you email us back or call us back? We hate to do it because it's better radio, but we will do phone interviews with people if they're up in Raleigh and can't get a camera in front of them. Susie Hamilton and I have had a debate over whether or not she's available or not during controversial votes or bills being passed. But Tom's very good, and there are some other people, not off the top of my head, but it's all about the communication process. If you're going to do this up in Raleigh and you're going to choose to run, Ted Davis, we haven't heard much from after he won back in November. I just ask you to be available a little bit, you know, to discuss things that you're doing up in Raleigh.
It's, you know, it's an interesting struggle, I think, because we all know that the lawmakers are so busy when they're up there and when things are happening. That's when we, as reporters, need to talk to them the most, but that's when they're busiest. And it is a balancing
act. Tom will text me. You know, I'm doing this, and he has a texting account where he can send multiple texts to multiple people. And I texted him yesterday, can we talk about the death penalty? He goes, I'm in caucus, but I'll call you back later this afternoon. And I'm like, great, you know, done.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Reporters Roundtable here on Coastline. The phone lines are open. Give us a call and tell us about the stories that you're talking about over dinner. What's dominating your conversation? What are you worried about that's happening in the area? 343-1138 is the number to call. We're also taking emails at talk@whqr.org, or you can tweet us at #HQR. Talk. We've gotten several emails, actually, concerns about fracking coming to the area. Kevin, what have you seen on that recently?
The fracking came up right when I was leaving, so I know a little bit about it. And mostly, I believe most of the fracking issues will be not in this area. I think there's some byproduct or waste of some sort that Representative Catlin was talking about that may come down in this area. But I think for the most part, fracking is not something that we're going to see locally. But it is a statewide issue, and it is something that, you know, this General Assembly seems to be pushing to get moving.
And there are other kinds of alternative energy sources out there besides just natural gas that the state has been looking at. Wind energy is a real possibility for this area, offshore wind energy. We have another email from a listener who asks, he says, please discuss legislation to roll building code standards back to 2006. He writes, this would be a huge setback to green building and energy conservation.
Well, there is a bill that's going to do that, I believe. There's also, you know, there's a big push right now, and I don't know if I can answer specific questions on it, but here's what that bill comes from. And it comes from this overarching idea that a lot of the GOP legislators have of really looking at regulatory reform and looking at the way regulation works in this state. They had a town hall meeting down here to discuss it. And in that town hall meeting, they stressed that this is not just environmental regulation. This is regulation for everything, from local regulations, from the government to, you know, business to the environment. And I think that's probably a byproduct of this idea that they really want to see what they look at, how the state regulates and sets rules. I know Representative Millis out of Hampstead, that's one of his main issues. He's done a lot of work on it. Representative Catlin is a subcommittee chair for the environmental regulations. So it'll be interesting to see, though, when they had the town hall meeting, some of the reaction to some of the things they said. I know that Representative Brawley, who's going to do the local government, some of his comments about rolling back government regulation, I think was...
Tell us about some of those skepticism comments, Kevin Maurer, that he made at this meeting.
Well, I mean, they basically came down and they went over kind of the philosophy and the idea. And he mentioned specifically there was, I think it was Carteret County, they had a lawsuit where there were some impact fees that were put on developers, and the developer sued, and he won. And basically what the Supreme Court said was that if the state legislature doesn't give local government the task to do it, you can't do it. And I think they're going to use that as a guideline as they look back at regulations. And a lot of these regulations then are you know, local based. Local leaders, local elected leaders have decided this is what needs to be done, that we represent local voters, and this is what, you know, we want in our community. And it'll be interesting to see when we were talking before about how Raleigh sometimes forgets there's a state connected to him, how Raleigh applies this idea of this philosophy on these local leaders.
343-1138 is the number to call, or send us an email at talk@whqr.org and tweet us. We haven't gotten any tweets yet at #HQRTalk. You're listening to the Reporters Roundtable here on Coastline. Another issue that our local delegation is working hard to get through in Raleigh, film incentives. With this new, I guess it's a lack of appetite for incentives in general in Raleigh because there's so much going on around tax reform. And I don't know how close we are to seeing any legislation along those lines, but our local delegation is working hard to say, hey, film incentives are different. It's not the same thing. Why are film incentives different, and why are they important for this area?
Well, Scott? I think a lot of it is emotional. I mean, I went to see Safe Haven because I knew it was set in Southport, and I wanted to see the local scenes and how they portrayed it, not because I'm a Nick Sparks fan. And I think a lot of people will come to Southport because they saw that movie. They are Nick Sparks fans, and they want to relate to, they're not going to find some of the things that are in the movie because they were props, but I think they'll come in Southport. It's a romanticism of seeing yourself on the big screen, and we all know that that's an economy driver, but there's no tangible, you know, you can't say how many times did you go to Lowe's to buy lumber, or, you know, how many nails did you buy? I mean, there's a scene going on from a horror movie, two blocks from the station, cars are turned upside down on Red Cross. I mean, it's awesome. They were blowing smoke yesterday. That's cool. And I think we need more of that here because it does give Wilmington something. I mean, One Tree Hill, it's a tourist thing. We would run into tourists from Sweden hanging out on Front Street in front of the diner, just wanting to get a glimpse of people. But what's the tangible economic benefit of that? You can't say. We know it's there. But I think tax incentives are hard because you're saying, well, we're losing all this money, and we hope that all this money will come back by them spending it here producing this movie. Iron Man 3 stretched us hard. There were a lot of people in town. These were LA people. This was not what we were used to. They brought some of their own people in, and in the beginning there was some frustration of not using local people, but I think it proved to the film industry that, and the LA Times wrote about it, that Wilmington is a cool place to film something.
Let's take a call. We have Ray from Wilmington. Ray, you're on Coastline.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm wondering what you all think the future political ambitions of Tom Goolsbee are.
That's funny. We were talking about that at lunch today. I think there are some. I think that he's being very savvy in what he's doing. And I do think he has his eye on something bigger in Raleigh or perhaps even in Washington.
Has he made any noises about this to you?
No, not at all. It's just James Payne is an attorney, and I interviewed him Friday, and we get a lot of news releases from him. And I said, hey, we get a lot of stuff from you. What are you running for? And he's like, Picky, I'm just running for the hills, you know? And people want publicity for different things. And yeah, I think Tom has aspirations to do bigger and better things.
Well, let's talk about some of the bills that Senator Tom Goolsbee has filed in this particular session. He's been a busy man. We're looking at, you talked about the death penalty bill, Scott, which lifts the moratorium. And there's a sex trafficking bill also that's interesting, Kevin, that I guess increases penalties for pimps and human traffickers and what right. Can you tell us about that bill?
First, I just want to say Nick Sparks. I like how you talk about it. Like you guys hang out. Like I had a beer with Nick down in before we went to see Safe
Haven. Man.
You and Nick Sparks. I thought you were going to drop a Nicky on us in a minute. The sex trafficking bill. That's quite a segue from Nick Sparks. Now I'm calling him Nick. All right. The sex trafficking bill, essentially, the one that I was covering, got through committee, was basically would make pimps. Would put them on the sex offender list, which I think Senator Goolsbee argued pretty persuasively because it passed the committee unanimously about how they get on this list. It's going to be a lot difficult to run their business
right.
If you want to illicit business, I guess, if they're on a sex offender list. So that was one. But I was surprised at the level of debate that came with that bill, because I think a lot of his fellow senators had concerns about expanding the breadth of the list and putting people on there that maybe didn't have specific sex crimes like rape or, you know, child crimes, that it was kind of expanding it a little bit into this servitude idea. But Senator Goolsbee had a good response to that, which was, you know, basically these guys are bad guys, and if there's a way to track them and stop them from doing what they're doing, then I don't see a reason not putting them on the list. But the sex trafficking bill was something he did. It's important to him. It was one of the first bills he talked to me about.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Maybe as a defense attorney, this is what he encounters, women who have been arrested for prostitution, and they have no way to hold accountable the people who are actually pulling the strings and who are continuing to victimize some of these people.
And that was Representative Hamilton's. She's the kind of the House counterpart. Her and Representative Davis are also going to team up on a House bill, and that's what she's pushing, is that treating prostitutes like victims and trying to give them some rehabilitation instead of incarceration. But
yeah, you know, as I understand, there's a whole potential program on the table mm-hmm. for that, where if they are able to jump through certain hoops and pass certain tests, their entire criminal record would be expunged or record related to those right. issues.
Yeah, it's really a philosophical switch on the way that you view this crime. And I think a lot of it's being driven by the fact that, you know, it is a port town. It's something about how, you know, North Carolina ranks high for this crime. And I think that, I don't want to say it embarrasses Senator Goolsbee, but I think that's one of the motivating factors.
343-1138 is the number to call. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Reporters Roundtable here on Coastline. We're talking with Kevin Maurer of the Star News and Scott Picky, news director at WWAY-TV. If there's a story that you've been talking about that you can't stop talking about that becomes the subject of conversation at the dinner table, we want to hear about it. 343-1138 is the number to call. We now have a county commissioner who is challenging a longtime U.S. congressman for the seat in the 7th Congressional District. What do you think about that, Scott Picky?
Well, first of all, I have to say that in my personal opinion, you're talking about Jonathan Barfield. He
yes.
Mishandled his announcement. He made a deal with Francis Weller at WECT to exclusively announce that he was going to run for Congress, a very significant announcement.
And running for Mike McIntyre's
yes,
seat, challenging Mike McIntyre.
In yes. the primary. And we called him right before he went over there and said, hey, can you share this with us? And we can do it at the same time. And he's like, no, Francis is holding a gun to my head. I made a deal. And then WECT completely turned the floor over to him and said, you now have the floor, Mr. Barfield. What's your announcement? And that left out the newspaper, that left us out, that left News 14 out, that left the Port City Daily out, and you out, and anybody else that's covering news that day. And so I feel that he misstepped. We refused to cover it. It didn't happen as far
so
as
So you
we were
haven't
concerned.
Made the announcement.
Correct.
What do you think his chances are? Quickly, Kevin Maurer.
I mean, I think anything's going to be an uphill fight. It's going to be a tough election. He's taking on an incumbent who's got quite a track record.
Yes, yes, he is. And coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk about some of the local issues that have been dominating the headlines lately, including the alleged Ponzi schemer with pipe bombs in his storage locker and the Wilmington Police Department being investigated by the SBI. You're listening to Coastline here on WHQR 91.3. We're still taking your calls, emails, and tweets. Give us a call at 343-1138. If you'd like to ask a question, talk about a recent state or local news story, or just raise a concern, we'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at talk@whqr.org or tweet us at #HQRTalk. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to this Reporters Roundtable edition of Coastline. Our guests in the studio today are Kevin Maurer of the Star News and Scott Pickey, news director at WWAY-TV. We're talking about the stories that are making headlines and conversation. If you haven't yet weighed in, we'd like to hear what your family is talking about over dinner. What are the stories that we should be talking about that perhaps we're not? Give us a call at 343-1138 or send an email to talk@whqr.org. Danny from Ocean Isle, welcome to Coastline.
Yes, hi. How you doing, Miss Hilburn? This is Danny Hefner.
Welcome to the show. What's your question, Danny?
A question that you interviewed me back during the election season of 2012.
Yes, I remember.
One of the questions that I have, and I would like to see if there has been any further movement on it, is on the voter ID bill. And on that voter ID bill, I have been doing the research on the constitutionality of the way it is currently written. And by what I'm seeing, it would go against a Supreme Court decision that was made back in 1966. Has there been any further movement and anything, information released to the reporters as to how this is going to affect the general public, if it's going to be in line with the Supreme Court decision of 1966 on poll tax, which states that there should be no fees charged to any person to vote?
Danny, thanks for your question. Kevin, where are we? Has there been, beyond the hearing yesterday, which I understand there was testimony from a number of different groups, including one of the groups in New York, the Brennan Center for Justice, which is part of New York University, I believe, and they've been doing a nationwide study of voter fraud and voter ID laws. And I think what they testified to was the fact that there is no evidence of voter fraud in the state of North Carolina at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really interesting question, the constitutional question that I'm going to look up a little bit, because I've never heard it put that way. So he's kind of stumped me. So he wins the award for something. But I think if you look at one thing on voter ID, though, it's part of a broader platform that the GOP has been using on the past elections. And I think this is just part of that. But it'll be interesting to see if it gets through and how it changes.
Okay, let's take another phone call. John, welcome to Coastline.
Oh, thank you. I was curious, I don't like to beat a subject to death, but with reference to Senator Goolsbee, he's a defense attorney. How would he be able to defend someone who was on a sex case or possibly a murder case as he's put forward these two bills? And I'll wait for your response on offline.
Thanks so much. Scott
Pickey. That's a good question.
Yeah.
It's one of the ones we're doing that story today. and it'll probably in its longer form run at 6 o'clock. But that was one of the questions I wanted the reporter to ask was, you're a defense attorney and you're presenting this with your senator hat on. How is this going to affect you? So I haven't checked into the newsroom since lunch, and I'm not sure what his answer was to that question, but it'll be interesting to see later on tonight during the 6 o'clock news how he responds to that.
That is a very good question. Jim from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for your time. Real quick, I know you had talked about the interest that we get locally on hits on your website and if there's an interest of, like, the Pope. I guess my question would be more along the lines of interviewing maybe people like Police Chief or Ben David and ask them what's trending. If all the stories are getting clicked on that are maybe of interest to some of the locals. However, Ben David sits back, and he might be able to shed some light on trends that are taking place along the lines of, like, gang violence that we, the average citizen, doesn't really want to know about because it's too frightening, but yet Ben David would like to get that information out to say this is a real concern. I'll take your answer off there, but I didn't know if you guys have thought about taking people, you know, those dignitaries, and inquiring with them, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
That's a great question, Jim. Thank you. That's actually something that we're trying to do here at WHQR is bring in public officials and not necessarily always have an agenda, but just say, what are you talking about? What are you thinking about? What's happening behind the scenes? And what are we likely to see in the near future? Kevin.
Well, I mean, I think it's different mediums. And I think Scott will have a much different answer to this. For us, that's reporting. I mean, we try to stay in touch with these people on a constant basis, and that's a lot of what we get story-wise that isn't breaking comes from those kind of meetings and really keeping your finger on what it is that the officials or the whatever organization you're covering is talking about, is dealing with, and then building the stories from there. So a lot of what the caller wants to know is what happens behind the scenes for us. But
right.
Jim's kind of freaking me out because there's another story we're doing today, and it relates to us going to Burgaw yesterday for a murder story. Mm-hmm. And our reporter and photographer noticed on the wall or the door of the sheriff's department that alcohol inhalation systems are a problem up in Pender County. We also know that the Marine Corps has had classes about this problem. What the problem is you can go online and for, I'm told, $30, order something that you can snuff or huff alcohol, that it turns into a vapor, and so you'll get drunk faster because it's going through your nose and straight into the system. That was a, hey, we noticed you have a flyer on your door. This is obviously a trend, like Jim said. And so today, I understand we were going to talk to an undercover cop up there about why this is a problem. It's not illegal. I mean, you can take alcohol however you want. However, it's dangerous. And that's a trend going on in Pender County. And as I understand, moving up into Onslow because of Marines are doing it.
And that's a great point. It is important to have the journalist's eyes be open to that. And I think being able to cover a beat actually helps mm-hmm. with that, too, because then you are able to not necessarily use the information that you get off the right, but it can open your eyes to some of the
other things. And that's what we try
to
do at the station is, a lot of times I've been in a lot of newsrooms that rely on the morning newspaper to figure out what they're going to cover in the afternoon. And I've tried to set a standard that we have a partnership, like I mentioned, with the paper, and if they break something, I can use that and send everybody back to their website. So that's a great angle of the partnership. However, I'm not going to rely on them for our 5 and 6 o'clock news unless they break a big story. And then I can bring them on if they break a big story, and I can put a reporter on something else. We're big on what we call enterprise reporting, which is we sit in my office every morning and figure out what we're going to do for the day.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another phone call. Ruth from Wilmington, you're on Coastline.
Hey there.
Hi there. It sounds like you have a little one in the background.
I've got two, and now they know I'm on the phone. So there we go. In the summertime, you passed a law for no smoking on the beach, which I think is an adequate law.
You said you think it's inadequate?
No, I think it's adequate. I think okay. It's a good thing, I guess.
It is adequate. Okay.
Yes. I'm not sure if it was money well spent. I think that, I've just had two experiences myself where I've just realized that cab drivers are not non-smoking, and I just kind of thought that that was sort of a given around here, and I jumped in a cab twice in the last less than 6 months and was almost knocked over, and I thought that because we have laws that the bars and everything were non-smoking, that I just assumed that cab drivers and everything were non-smoking also. And I just was sort of wondering if this isn't an issue. It didn't seem to be an issue with the cab driver also. He laughed at me when I asked, maybe next time I should ask for a non-smoking cab. And he said, good luck, you'd be waiting all night long.
So, Ruth, was he smoking while you were in the cab, or did the cab just smell like smoke?
No, he butted out when I got in, but it just absolutely reeked of cigarettes. The next cab driver that I had to take, that cab was horrific with cigarettes.
You know, that's an interesting question, because North Carolina does have a sort of controversial history with banning smoking in public places. Thanks so much for the phone call, Ruth. I know we were sort of lagging behind other states when it came to making it illegal to smoke in public buildings. And I know there are some municipalities around this area that have recently instituted smoking bans, fairly recently. Mm-hmm. And then the beach.
Well, yeah, Riceville Beach is the first beach to do it. But Representative Davis, I think, was going to take up the local bill to do it. But if I recall correctly, he's running into some issue with it a little bit because of the scope and will it set a precedence. And going back to the caller, banning smoking in cabs, that's the first I've heard it. I don't know if anybody's taken that on, but I think you get into the same sort of territory with, you know, how people... You know, can you ban it? Is it a public space or public space or not? I don't really know, but I've not heard anybody take that on yet.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard of the smoking in the cab issue as well. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Reporters Roundtable here on Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn in the studio with WWAY TV News Director Scott Pickey and Star News Correspondent Kevin Maurer. We're talking about the issues that you're concerned about, the stories that you and your friends and your family are talking about, and the stories that people can't stop talking about. We have about less than 10 minutes left in the show, so I want to get to some of the other local issues that we've really been talking about lately. There's an alleged Ponzi schemer who came down here from Pennsylvania. And Kevin, I understand that you did some investigative reporting on this guy. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Everybody kind of remembers the storage unit just south of Monkey Junction when the New Hanover County Sheriff's and the SBI and the Wilmington Police Department found. I haven't really pinpointed exactly how many bombs in this storage container, but happened about 2 weeks after I got on the story. Fran Norton and I just decided right after I was done with Raleigh to really dig into the story. And we spent about 3 days. We sort of had the luxury. And in media markets now, you don't really have the luxury of digging into things, but we did. We took about 3 days, dug into it, and we were able to sort of dig up who this guy was, dig up his alias. And basically what he was is he's this Steve Merkenthaler, who was accused of doing a $2 million Ponzi scheme up in Philly, and ended up just breaking bail and running to North Carolina. And he set up down here and he rented the storage unit and he was building bombs. He had bombs here and about 60 bombs, pipe bombs up in Philly. I don't know how the bombs go to the Ponzi scheme. I'm not sure if they're related at all. That's still up in the air. There's more questions in this story than actual answers that we have at the moment.
So we'll be watching as that one unfolds.
Yeah.
343-1138. We have just a few minutes left in the show, so if you haven't yet weighed in, we'd like to hear from you. We have some emails. Janet from Ivanhoe emailed us at talk@whqr.org, and she says, fracking is the most important issue on the minds of my family and friends. Scott Pickey?
I think, you know, it's like Titan, which you had a show on a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very emotional conversation. If you're on either side, there's not a lot of middle ground right now. I know that there are a ton of controversies about the water going in. Are they causing earthquakes in Arkansas? There are a lot of questions, like Kevin said about the pipe bomber. There are a lot of questions about fracking that we haven't answered. And, you know, we're messing with the earth when you're doing this stuff. And, you know, this is the first time there's a good thing that comes out of it. But what's the price to pay to get that gas out of the ground?
And that's a question that we haven't yet answered.
You know, everybody has their hot button issue or a nerve, and I understand why, you know, that would be the topic of conversation around her living room or dining room table, because I think because of the don't know factor.
Here's an interesting email from Beverly. She says, most Wilmingtonians are more concerned about traffic rather than Nick Sparks or human trafficking. The media used to report on it all the time, but not so much anymore. And that's true.
It's a good point.
I remember the days when we would talk about the fact that New Hanover County was one of the most dangerous places
and
in
we're
the state
one of
to
the
drive.
Most fastest, or one of the fastest growing counties. We used to be the second fastest growing city behind Las Vegas back in the 90s. Things have slowed down because of the recession. But I think the traffic story, not to be disrespectful, the traffic story gets old after a while. And you tell the same story over and over and over again. And I tell candidates who are moving here and they ask about traffic, and I say, well, usually the traffic lasts about 20 or 30 minutes. You know exactly where it's going to be. It's going to be at College and Oleander. It's going to be at Shipyard and Carolina Beach Road. It's going to be downtown getting off the bridge if the bridge is up. And it's just something we deal with. I think what we should be discussing is the failure of our forefather politicians to keep the infrastructure up to date with the growth of the city and the county. You had to form CFPUA because the city and county didn't want to take care of the sewer and the water system. And we get emails all the time about this 80-year-old pipe that broke, and people in this neighborhood are going to be without water. Look at 3rd Street before it was renovated. It was awful.
Let's take another call. Phone caller, Gene from Wilmington, you have an interesting question that I think ties right into what Scott Pickey was just talking about.
Yes. I know that Bill Saffo came out against the sewer regulation that is putting the squeeze on developers and construction people. But we've gone for about a year without having a major sewage explosion anywhere. And so it seems to be working in our favor, but he has a whole lot of family members in both construction and real estate. How is this not him coming out against the sewer regulation? How is this not a conflict of interest? And I'll take that offline.
Thanks for your call, Gene. Kevin Maurer.
What regulation are we exactly talking about? I know that there's right now they're up in Raleigh. They're dealing with this idea of sewer capacity, and there's a Diener's got a formula that they want to change that says at 85% capacity, you've got to build new pump stations.
County's working with the septic tanks.
That's right.
And they're working together on the septic. I'm not sure what the caller's regulation is exactly.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. There is the Marquee Hills and Heritage Park.
Yeah. Gene, I know one thing. You know, the city and the county kind of got out of it by forming CFPUA, and they're in charge. And there are, you're right, a sewer spill happens now, and Kevin Wizardo, who's been here much longer than I have, says that's nothing compared to what happened 3, 4, 5 years ago. So, but there, you're right. CFPUA is trying to get its act together, and things have calmed down for them over the last year and a half, 2 years. And it seems like they're getting a grip on this ancient infrastructure that we have.
We had this Facebook comment from a listener who says that this is what she's thinking about, providing a feeling of safety downtown, more noticeable police presence on downtown streets on horseback, and encouraging a nightlife that isn't totally based on alcohol consumption.
Rachel, we would need another hour for that one.
That's right. That's a whole show. How to revitalize downtown and
diversify. The first problem is perception, and the second problem is vision, and the third problem is responsibility, and the fourth problem is a fracturing of the people who want to do something downtown are not on the same page. So in my perception, this is completely editorial, opinionated, we're just spinning our wheels. Everybody's got their little fiefdom. Nobody wants to share any power or anything. And the perception of some people is things are safe, but yet a young man is killed 2 blocks from my house last year in the Community Arts Center parking lot. And the perception in this community, whether the facts back it up or not, is there is violence and crime downtown.
Okay. Should we stop talking about Titan? New Hanover County Commissioner Chair Woody White recently said at a meeting that this is something we need to get off of and get on to the discussion about economic growth. Kevin Maurer?
Well, I mean, I think Titan is a hot-button issue. I don't think you get any industry to agree on it. Obviously, the left doesn't agree on it. I think it's a difficult issue. You may have a point. I don't know for sure, but it's going to come up again.
Our guests today on Coastline have been Kevin Maurer, Star News reporter, and Scott Pickey, news director of WWAY-TV. Thanks for tuning in to this special broadcast of Coastline. The show is produced by Asia Brown and Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Cleve Callison is executive producer. John Mortara is our webmaster and technical coordinator. Lindsay McGrath is our call screener. Asia Brown is today's board operator. And heartfelt thanks to all of you who called and emailed us today. We're always glad to have you join the conversation here on Coastline. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio or our licensee, Friends of Public Radio, Incorporated. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.